Hello, hello. I am Jessica, Raging Lady Boner. Welcome, welcome. And with me tonight is my new friend. She's an artist and a podcaster and a dancer, Emily Swan. Hi.
Hello.
So you and I met because you do streaming for your art, which I think is amazing. I think I told you I live alone and I work alone, so playing y'all streams every day and at nighttime makes me feel a little less lonely in the middle of this pandemic. But were you streaming before the COVID started, or was that something you started like after?
Nope, I didn't start it necessarily for reaching out to a community. I started it so that I had a way for students of mine who were at home who wanted to connect with me and my art, but maybe didn't want the one-on-one of a Zoom chat where they're kind of put on the spot. Like this way, we could talk about art, I could teach them, but at no point did they have to show their work or interact with me if they didn't want. I find a lot of my art kids tend to be kind of shy, so being on camera is tough, and showing what they're working on is a 50-50. Some of them love it, some of them hate it. So
that was
kind of the start where I was just like, I want another way to reach out to these kids. And a year later, look at me, and I was like, I love it.
It's so fun, and it is like way less risk. I spend a lot of time on Zooms for like rehearsing with my chorus, and it's just like so exhausting to be on camera all the time, and like being able to like be in the chat and like just talk to you and like type in and you can respond to me. Like, it's way less stressful in my opinion. So I get where your kids are coming from for sure. But you've been doing art for a lot longer than that, though, I'm guessing.
I'm one of the weird art kids. I've been an art kid forever. Like, even when I was little with my parents, like, they knew it was going to be art. And I toyed around with a few different things. But even once I got into high school, I was pretty sure, like, I knew I was going to go to art school. And then it was just narrowing down which part of art I wanted to enter into. And then, back. So it's been art forever.
I love that. How did dance work into that? Was that just like part of your artistic expression?
Again, big shout out to my family. They really good stuff. So I was actually born with bilateral club feet. So I had big time surgery when I was 6 months old. And then I don't remember any of this, so it's fine. I wore baby caps for 2 years, the first 2 years of my life that had to be changed like every couple of weeks to set my feet and all of that. So as a, I think, hope to encourage me to really stretch out my ankles and my heel cords, like getting me into dance and getting me into movement and really working on those. And then I fell in love. I started a creative movement when I was 3 and I danced my entire time up until I graduated high school. And then as soon as I moved back from college, I went back to the same studio and danced more.
Yeah. And you teach dance now. Is that correct?
I do. Yep.
Oh my gosh.
So I started taking social dance. So I started doing swing dance when I was in middle school. And the parents of one of my partners were the ones who taught it. And when I came back and was coming back and joining them, they had just had a grandbaby and they were actually interested in maybe taking a step back. And they were like, would you be interested in taking over our classes? And of course, I'm just like, oh my gosh, but you were my teachers and that's so much pressure. No. But I kind of have to because I love this so much. So
yeah,
I started teaching, the social dance. And I've been a like a fill-in instructor if other teachers needed it because I've been taking class there so long. But
yeah,
my first like, I'm in charge of the planning and the scheduling and the whole thing. And
yeah,
I love it.
I love that too. We kind of got into a funny conversation one of your streams because I was asking you like how dance made you feel about your body, because I was not allowed to go to dance. My dad was a pastor and super like conservative, and dancers are hoes, especially like cheerleaders and stuff. So we were not allowed to do that. And I also sort of, when I got older, had this idea that like dance would have really fucked up my view of my body even more than it already is fucked up. But it doesn't seem like that was the case for you. So I was just interested to see like what you thought about what dance did for you.
Yeah. And it was great too, because I love it, because we're in chat and, you know, it's just hanging out and doing stuff. And all of a sudden, like, it was a serious question. I was like, oh man, like what's heavy for a Friday afternoon? But it's good. And I will definitely admit, you know, I still struggle with body issues to this day. A lot of them are self-imposed. Isn't great all the time. I blame the worms in there, but
sure.
The studio that I was a part of was very much community first, and anybody could dance. And that was really important. And I had fellow dancers that I danced with there who went and studied at other studios who pushed a much heavier ballet curriculum. And a lot of them wanted to move on and be dancers in the future. And honestly, I don't say this as a sad thing, but with the way that my feet are, there was a very clear understanding that there were limitations of what I could physically do. Like, I didn't want to go to college to play sports, even though I loved softball. I didn't want to go to college for dance because I was like, I can't. One, I don't want to commit to this because I don't want to ever lose my passion for it. But two, I'm aware that I cannot physically perform for the level that I'm pretty sure you need to be a collegiate athlete. And that was okay. Mm-hmm. And I never wasn't able to enjoy what I was doing. You know, there's still time. Yeah. We talked about a little bit, like, costuming is usually the one time where I get real sad. Now as an adult, I have wine, which is great. But at no point did I ever feel from the instructors there, from any of the dance teachers, that I wasn't as deserving of my spot as anybody else. And that was huge. Like, that was not for me, and that was enough. And I liked that.
No, I love that. I definitely think there's something to be said for, like, not turning every passion into, like, a job. I feel like for me, and maybe just like a generational thing, but like there's this compulsion to turn everything that I do into a moneymaker. And part of that is just like being poor and like not having enough money. But like, it's really difficult because I've had so many things that I loved doing that I then was like, ooh, I can like sell this or I can sell my time. And like, it's ruined all of it for me at this point. So
yeah, no. And that's a big thing. And there are still times, even when it comes to art, and even though I'm very happy that art is my career, where I still have to force myself, like, it's okay to just sketch. This doesn't have to be a finished print. This doesn't have to be something you sell. This doesn't even have to be something anybody sees.
Yeah.
You can do this because you actually like it.
But yeah,
you still have to remind yourself of it. And I agree completely. Like, I feel like it's a weird push for our generation that you have to, you know, like, well, you're good at this thing, which means you love it, which means you have to make money for it. And
yeah,
I don't think that that's always a great way to take things.
Yeah, I agree. I'm learning that now. And that's only because, like, I luckily, like, make enough money now that I don't have to sell everything to make ends meet. But even still, I'm just like, I can make money off of this. And I'm like, stop doing that. You don't have to. I don't have to monetize everything.
That side hustle brain. It's always going as like, what I could.
The gig economy, man. It's real bitch. Chat is mad because they think that we're ignoring them, but we're just having a really good conversation, chat.
Also, chat, I'm totally going to admit that I'm stressed that my internet's just going to stop working at some point. I want to make sure I get the interview through before it dies again. So I'll email. Hi, Hugh and Steve. I'm happy to see you guys. Thanks for coming out.
Hi, Kruggles. Everyone who's in the chat, hi. Oh, there's Tony P.
Oh, hi, Tony P. Yes, hustle culture. If you're not hustling, then you're doing something wrong. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. And I have a lot of friends who are in a very similar thing. And I appreciate us now as adults, and especially in the current like pandemic part of this, where even though we are at home and we in theory have more time to work on stuff, like you still force yourself to build in some downtime to either just watch something or read or relax or just not be hustling on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Important.
I despise the idea of hustle culture. I'm a part of this women's co-working space because I have a small business doing bookkeeping. And I had a meeting with a colleague of mine one time, and she was like, you just have to take antidepressants and like work your ass off and just like deal with it. And I was like, that sounds horrible. Like, is this what I have to do to be a small business owner? Like, I don't want to do that. I would just rather only work full time and not like help people and pursue the things that I'm good at. Like I ended up talking to some other friends from the same co-working space, and they're like, no, don't listen to that person. Like, you can choose to be a part of the hustle culture if that makes you happy, but like, personally, I do not accept the idea that like hustle culture is the only way to be successful in this world. That's a very Americanized version, I think, of like success. And it's made my life a lot easier to accept that.
Yeah. And I will say, especially in my 20s, I came down really hard on myself because I was working full-time jobs that were, we'll say, art adjacent. And while I was still, you know, I was teaching part-time, I was going to Comic-Cons, I was still doing that, but I wasn't making enough money from those. So having a full-time job gave me the flexibility to explore other things and try. And then when I got to a point where it ended up working out, I felt like my time at that job was done. And I did quit the full-time thing and move to a more gig lifestyle.
Yeah.
That was better for me, but I wouldn't have wanted to do that sooner. And I think I would have failed doing it sooner because I just, I wasn't ready and I didn't have the brain and the mindset for what I needed to do in order to be successful working in a gig.
Yeah, it's definitely a mindset thing and just like what makes you happy. Like, and I feel like there's people on both sides who love to have this like sort of culture war over like full-time jobs versus like owning your own business. And it's like, and I get the whole like, well, you could be your own boss. Like, y'all, it sucks being your own boss. It's so hard. It like when I quit my full-time job a few years ago and started doing my bookkeeping business full-time, like I would work the most ridiculous hours into the weekend until like 11 p.m. Like it was fucking terrible. I hated it. And I found a balance between like a full-time job and like running my small business. And I'm lucky that I was able to find that. But like, it really is just like whatever your strength is. Not all of us are made to be our own bosses. It's a lot of work.
Yeah. And there's no HR department to like mediate issues I have with myself. So I'm just
like, like, and I can't even really afford a therapist. So
yeah. And I, you know, you talk about not just gig, like the gig lifestyle, but being a professional artist, you know, and I tell people this, it's like, I'm not just creating art. I'm also the marketing manager. I'm the business manager. I am the company owner. Like,
right. You're the accountant.
Yeah. And I was like, there are so many, and the social media manager, like there are so many other things outside of the actual art creation mm-hmm. that are very easy to get sucked into. And it can really like tap your creativity because all your energy goes to that.
Yeah.
And that, again, like you said, I don't think it's something that everybody's cut out for. And that's not a bad thing. Like, you're not a right. failure because you aren't cut out for that. It just means, you know, okay, so in the future, I look for a partner or I look to be a part of a studio or a company that affords me more creative freedom so I can still create what I want, but I have a little bit more structure that works for me.
Yeah. It's why I love what I do, because I do bookkeeping for small businesses. And like really like accounting and bookkeeping is like one of the biggest things that like sucks people's time. Like they will spend 10 hours doing what I can do in like half an hour because it's just like it's completely foreign to them. But also like even paying for that service is such a luxury because like it costs money to pay me to do that stuff for you. To pay people. Yeah, there are people that you could pay for social media and to do your accounting and to do like, but costs money, bro. So unless you could like go into debt trying to start this business, which is fair. Like it's a lot of work.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot. It's just, it's so much. But I, again, and it was funny. We had kind of a little like small business creator group that I was a part of for a while. And we talked about like, figuring out, you know, one, how much your time was worth to you, you know, the one thing that you can't get back. And it was, okay, so like you said,
it just hung that and I knew it was going to fall. But
like, okay, so again, if I'm going to spend 10 hours doing the bookkeeping, what could I accomplish art-wise in 10 hours and what could I make off of that? Like where it made sense to actually hire somebody else? Like
yeah.
Where was that time more valuable to me spent? Okay, so even that day, I don't work on art necessarily, and I just work on my social media, but something else is also getting done while that's happening. And like, you know, but again, it's all the balance. And if you are working from a very small budget at the start, it's really, really hard to let go of any of that because you just don't have capital.
Yeah. And I think that's like a big thing for small business owners is like learning when and where to value your time and how to value it. Like for the longest time with my business and even now, like I struggle with like, what do I need to charge people? And like some of my clients, I'm like, you guys are getting a steal for what I do for you. And I'm just getting to the point where I will like be like, no, it's going to cost this much money for that. And like, you can take it or leave it because I can't do it for any less than that. But that is rough, especially as a woman to like know how to value yourself and like actually ask for it and not be afraid of either like losing the business or seeming like you're not good enough to like do this or having someone tell you that. Like it's really difficult, honestly.
Yeah, there's a weird, and I know that some of it is put upon by myself, but there is also some of that like upfront, I have to justify the reason that I'm worth this money. And that's exhausting. And like you said, and it's tough because it's really hard to stand up for yourself a lot of the time. And especially, you know, I have a little bit of a cushion now because I have built up a clientele and I have a good base. But earlier on, when I was just starting to find freelance contacts, like, I kind of had to take work, even if I wasn't making the money I wanted to, because I just needed the experience. I needed to get something under my belt to start doing it so I could start building from it. And
yeah,
people got some really cheap work out of me because I didn't have the heart to charge them more.
Right. Yeah. And I get what you're saying about like how it's sort of like self-imposed, these like ideas of what you're worth. I follow a lot of like women on TikTok and Instagram who talk about like how to ask for like what you're worth in a corporate job interview. And it's just terrifying, but also like for them, it's a complete business decision. Like the reason why women make 80 cents on the dollar, or white women make 80 cents on the dollar that white men do, is because like, it's for them, like, it's more money in their pocket. So if they can pay women less money, they're going to. Like, that works out great for them. It's part of it is like us asking for it and not devaluing ourselves and being the ones to say like, no, like this is what I need. And like, if you can't give that to me, then like, we should talk about that then.
Yeah. And it's weird to say it like this, but having the luxury to walk away is a really weird place to be in. To the, nope, you're not going to pay me what I'm worth, and I am worth this. And even though it means that I might go without, you know, a job for a month while I'm working on stuff, or while I'm hustling and trying to find something else, like I need to walk away because I can't work for this situation. But that's, you know, that's a whole nother thing. That's just, it's so like, I'm just thinking about it right now.
Yeah, I went through the whole interview process, like applying for jobs and doing interviews last summer before I found my current job. And the biggest piece of advice people were giving was like, when they tell you to like, tell what your like salary request is, to not tell them what you're like, instead of giving them like what you're requesting for a salary, be like, okay, can you tell me what your budget is for this position? And that's like such a power move, like, because you don't know how they're going to respond in that scenario. But I've read about women who've done that, and they're like, they eventually gave in and told me what their budget was for the position, because all they're trying to do in that moment is like get you for less money than what they're willing to pay for it.
Yep.
Capitalism, baby. We got to learn how to operate in it.
Well, and it's, you know, again, and it makes me so mad at myself, because I realize I am so fast to undervalue and to undersell.
Like, yes.
I was talking to another artist recently who's younger than I am, and it was asking about pricing her work. And I said, you know, my big turning point was not that long ago, where I was at a convention and a customer told me that my commissions were priced too low. And I was just like, oh, that's bad. When the actual customer is like, oh, I'm getting a steal on this because you should have charged way more. And I was like,
right.
Oh, that hurts. Okay.
But right. Hopefully a wake-up call.
No, but you know what? It was one of those where I was like, all right, if someone who is paying me for this art is going to say that, then there's no excuse now. And yeah. What was helpful is I started to, again, take my personal opinion out of it and work on a more like mathematical scale, where I was like, all right, so, you know, this is what I would do for this, and this is what I would do for this, and it has to be this, and it can't be lower than this. And then I would kind of work from there. So I had taken my personal attachment out of the pricing scheme. Mm-hmm. But what, I'm in my almost mid-30s now. Like, it took me a while to get to that point. That wasn't something that I just knew at conventions.
I know people in their like 50s and 60s who still haven't figured that out. Like, that's literally my job, is to like go into businesses and be like, no, you need to be charging this much money, and I will tell your customers that that's what you're charging. Because when you remove yourself out of the equation and it's less personal, then you don't feel as bad. If it's someone else telling your customer like, no, it's this much money, and if you don't pay it, you're not getting like your tax return or whatever it is that you're selling to them. Like, it's a world of difference. But when you do that for yourself, it's kind of impossible. And I know that from myself, because like, there's some people where I'm like, I need to charge you like twice as much as what I'm charging you right now, but you're my client from the beginning. And there's something to be said about like, you know, grandfathering people and who were there for you in the beginning, but also like, I'm losing a lot of money. This conversation, I'm like, okay, I gotta do this tomorrow.
Yep.
I love that.
Oh, yeah. Man. It was neat. And obviously, you know, and I'm sure with you, because we're kind of working on a little bit of a sliding scale for how much time things take us. Like, I like being able to offer people a range. Like, mm-hmm. how would you feel about something in this bracket? Mm-hmm. Because that's where I'm thinking. And like that also, like, I'm not just giving them one number that they have to look at. Like, for some reason, that also checks off something in my brain where I'm like, okay, there's a little bit of wiggle room. Like, everybody's on the same page. Like, it just feels better. And, you know, then I can breathe.
So now that we are, fingers crossed, nearing the end, or at least we can see the light at the end of the tunnel of COVID, do you feel like you will ever go back to teaching in person, or do you want to just do streams for forever?
I think I will. Mm-hmm. And what I'm seeing right now is, so I teach a lot of middle schoolers, and there's definitely, they're getting screen burnout from school. They're not getting screen burnout from TikTok or YouTube, which, I mean, same. Like, it's a dopamine hit. I get it. And your brains are, they're running at a whole different processing rate than mine is. But there is a connection that you get, especially with the students that I teach, who tend to be, they're a little bit weirder kids. They're a little bit quieter. Like, they're just my weirdos, but I love them. And there's something special about being able to interact with them in person that I think is important to get back to. I'm hoping that it becomes a both options thing, mm-hmm. where I can be back in person, especially with dance, because the dance that I teach is literally social dance. Like, that, just ready to be like, hey, teach again, please. I miss it. But with art, like, yes, I like it. And even if we're teaching digital art classes, like, to be in the same room with them while they all have their iPads and work on that, like, that part of it, I think, is important. But now, because we have the infrastructure set up, and because we know that, oh, if it's a really bad snow day and I can't make it in, here, I'll send an email out and you'll get a link, and we can still have a Zoom class, or I can go live on stream and you can chat with me. And I think it's given us some other options for connectivity, which I'm excited about when it's not the only thing that they're doing.
Right. Yeah. It's been cool to see, like, the innovations in connections, like, now that we have gone through a whole year of a pandemic, but also, like, I'm kind of ready to see people again. So I'm ready for a balance. I don't want to go back to life where it's like every night I'm out and I'm also working all day long. Like, I want to keep a little bit of the COVID, like, me time and mix in a little bit of socialization. Yeah. Oh my gosh. But you got your shot, right? Well, your first one.
I got my first shot. Yep. Yeah. So in April, I get my second one. So
Did you get the Dolly shot or the Bill Gates shot?
Oh, I don't know. I got the
Pfizer. Okay. That's the Bill Gates shot.
I got the nanobots to start working. Like,
exactly.
Are you guys, you on the clock now? Like, let's do this. I'm ready.
Yeah, I know. I was like, when do I start hearing Bill Gates in my head? I already built a shrine. So when does it kick in? I'm so ready. We were talking about this because this was another, like, heavy chat conversation about BMI, because it's why I qualified for the shot when I got it. And it's been kind of hilarious seeing everyone have this, like, collective realization that, like, BMI is bullshit. Cause they're like, I'm not overweight, but BMI says that I'm overweight. And I'm like, yeah, fat people have been saying this for a long time, guys. Like,
it's weird.
Kind of bullshit. Yep. And I'm just like, and I only learned this because of TikTok, but BMI was created by a eugenicist, and he was a scientist. He was a mathematician, not like a health doctor scientist. Yeah. And he based it solely on the bodies of white men. So it's not based on, like, the body composition of women, which is very different, or people of other races, which is also very different. And I always kind of knew it was bullshit, but it's just been funny to watch people be like, well, I'm glad that everyone is eligible. If you are eligible for the shot, please go get it. I don't care if you think you're skinny or not, like, just go get it if you're eligible. But
no,
it's a very good, like, conversation starter. Cause I'm just like, we've been telling you guys for forever.
Yeah. And the idea too, that it was meant to, like, gather information for large groups of people, like, never for individuals. And
right.
Yeah. And again, we talk about it for so many years. Like, I have vivid memories of being in middle school and doing, like, a health and fitness thing where our whole goal is to track your BMI, being in high school at my most fit and, you know, having them show me, like, the flow chart of where you are. And they're like, well, you know, you're really obese for this. And then, like, doing an actual physical exam, she's like, oh, wow, you're really all muscle. I'm like, Yeah, I play sports and I dance 5 nights a week. Of right. course, it's all muscle. I just happen to only be 5'2".
Right.
I don't know. And yeah, and I was so happy because from the BMI talk, it kind of spun off into a conversation about talking to your doctor and the results that you get as a overweight woman versus people who are not, and how medical professionals feel comfortable talking to you in a different way because of that. And yes. like, that's the part where I just now, again, in my 30s, I go full rage. Like the flames.
Oh my God.
I'm like, no, I'm having none of this because it's literally bullshit. Also, exactly. No.
I told my sister today, I was like, I've been putting off going to see the doctor for a while now. And I was like, I think the next time I go, I'm just going to tell them that they can't weigh me. Like, you can take my blood pressure and, you know, you can do other blood tests on me, but you cannot weigh me. It just sends me into a spiral of like disordered eating and like shitty thoughts about myself. I'm not doing it anymore. And you can actually do that. Like, you pay your doctor. Like, you can tell them that they can't do something.
Again, we talked about that whole, like, you know, you getting work and stuff like that. They work for you. Exactly. You hire them. Like, they work for you. You can talk to them honestly, even right. if it's scary.
I have to bring this up because I want to make a comment on it. TikTok says it must be true. Well, first of all, Tony, I did my research and it was true what I saw on TikTok. But also, yes, TikTok usually is right. And I like what Laura said, that it's edutainment, because it is also that.
Yes.
I love me some TikTok. It makes me happy. It makes me laugh. It makes me cry. And it gives me a lot of good information. So, yeah. But don't go on it unless you're ready to spend a lot of time on there.
Yeah.
Or you have really good boundary setting with your time, which I don't.
I super don't. Nope. Literally, and this was a hack from my housemate who we both kind of struggle with time management at times. She literally got me like a kitchen timer because then I could set timers for things. And it's different because, at least for me, I obviously can set timers on my phone. But if I go to pick up my phone, I might check my messages. I might check Facebook. I might check Instagram. And I will then all of a sudden lose 45 minutes and have no idea how. So with this, that's it. It's just a timer. There's no fun yes. buttons on it. It's just a timer. And that kind of helps me in check. And especially on days when, again, hustle lifestyle, when I've got to get shit done. Mm-hmm. It helps to have that so that I don't get sucked into, you know, the distraction with my phone.
Have you ever heard of the Pomodoro method before?
I've heard of it. It sounds yes. great. In my brain, I'm like, you should do that. And then my brain's like, nah.
My like ADHD brain does not do it well, but there have been times where I've like mastered it. But basically you like take, I think it's like 15 minutes at a time and you set a timer and you get a 5 minute break at the end of it. And then every like 4 15 minutes, you get like a 20 minute break. If you have work that's like super boring, like my work can be sometimes where it's like just data entry and like going through spreadsheets or entering in transactions, it can be really helpful. But yeah, just having a timer in general, I think at least makes you aware of how much time you're spending on yes. stuff.
Yes. And there's a very weird thing because I am so quick to chastise myself and yell at myself for not getting enough done during a day and all of that. But at the same time with the timer, like you can actually look back, be like, all right, it's been a half an hour. What have we accomplished? We've actually accomplished all of this. Like
yeah.
setting that aside with your brain so that you can kind of reward yourself. Like, no, you did get stuff done. Your brain is lying yeah. to you that you didn't. You did actually do.
It's kind of cutting out still.
Okay. Yes. Yeah, 30 minute mark, and then that's like,
oh. Of course, okay. Yeah, perfect. That's okay though. We kind of strayed from the conversation topic, but that's okay. Yeah. So where can you hear me? Do you want to talk about yourself if you can hear me, or I can just put your banner up?
You're also
okay. Cool. Where can people find yeah. you?
People can find me everywhere across the internet at a swan named Emily. Yeah, Swan Boonies internet. No joke, Tony. Yeah, so at a swan named Emily on my Twitch channel, which is twitch.tv/aswannamedemily. That's where Doodle Crew shows up. That's where Sketching Shakespeare shows up. I'm also on In Addition Pod with the amazing Kruggles. That is at twitch.tv/almostdailypod. That's first and third Mondays. But yeah, pretty much A Swan Named Emily. I just relaunched my Etsy shop. So again, if you search A Swan Named Emily, that's up there too. If you want to grab some stickers, hopefully some of this is coming through.
It's all coming through. I'm getting all of it. Up. Perfect. Yay. And you can find me on In Addition on April the 5th, I think is when I'm going to be on their show with her and Kruggles. I'm so excited. And I am Jess. I'm Raging Lady Moaner. You can find me at these down here on the bottom of your screen. Thank you so much, everyone who is in chat today, and for dealing with our internet issues, but I think we got it worked out for the most part. But thank you so much for coming on, Swan. This has been so great. Bye, everyone.
So fun. Thank you so much for having me.